I plan my stay so that I would end up having my birthday here, existing through it or something. So at one time we were sitting together with some disciples, and we thought, well, we'll just have a pizza party, and, you know, that'll be it. Keep it simple. But there are two schools, or maybe more schools of thought. On reflection, my personal understanding is that there is a need for disciples to worship their spiritual master. Of course, their spiritual master should worship Srila Prabhupada in a very grand way, so that everybody understands who is the real source of our salvation. But we are not Rithviks. This is a new term in Islam, but I'm sure you've all heard it before. We believe in Vartmana Acharya, or a living present guru. And there is a lot of philosophy and tradition to back up this conclusion. It is not simply something that has been invented. In fact, there are people who think that the scriptures were invented by a bunch of people who got together and decided that they needed a way to control the people. So they just invented all the scriptures. There are people who think like that. But such an attitude is based mostly on envy and a poor understanding of the science of self-realization. So, personally, not only personally, I can't, all of my God brothers are not inclined to accept worship from other Vaishnavas, whether they be disciples or anyone. It is this, some of the things are a lot of fun. I think they're kind of fun, like foot bathing. That's, you know, it's kind of a fun ritual. I don't know, pouring grape juice and honey all over someone's feet, and, you know. There, of course, there is meaning to it, but just the abandon. You know, who would ever think of, you know, usually grape juice, you drink it, or honey, you put it in some sweets and eat it, or something like that. But here we are, you know, pouring it over someone's speed. So just the uniqueness of it kind of makes my heart light. I think it is. I think Harinam Sankirtan, I also, going out on the street and chanting the holy names of Krishna in the middle of a big metropolis, a big city, where everybody's engaged in running here and there, totally for sense gratification. You go downtown, any big city at noon, or anywhere from 11 until 2 or 3 in the afternoon, and you find the modes of nature are so thick with passion that, you know, sometimes it's easier to cut a cake than it is to cut the modes. They're so thick, you know, you see people rushing here and there. So to go downtown and just say, you know, everybody drop what you're doing, chant Hare Krishna, be happy, have no worries, it's almost audacious. And in fact, people think like that. They think you people are just useless. You're parasites on society. How dare you not work like a donkey like us? How dare you? But we're declaring that God is the supreme controller, and we've got faith, and we don't care for your materialistic society. We want to save as many people as possible. So, all of the different aspects of our worship also, they're very different than anything outside of India. I would say they're very advanced because they're all related. There is definitely a reason and an overall philosophy behind everything. So it's not just blind ritual. And like I said, a lot of it is fun, it's gay, it's joyous. When we were in New Vrindavan for Janmashtami, we had a beautiful ceremony of Bharatanatyam dance. And we had a beautiful boat ceremony in a lake that they have in the temple compound. And they put fish in that lake. There was a giant fish this long swimming all around the lake. Actually, Mukunda has a picture of some of the fish. And there were little goldfish and there were swans. I mean, they were plastic swans. You don't get swans over here so easily. And there was all the flower decorations, and it was just so beautiful. And the kirtan was sweet, and you just felt like you were in heaven. You felt like it was not the material. For a short period of time, you really forgot your material miseries. So our whole culture is like that. And part of that culture is to offer respect to the Guru. Everyone who takes part benefits, except for the Guru. He's got to really got to be careful that he doesn't think that any of this is being done for him. He really has to remember and he has to almost like a mantra chanted over and over again. This is for Krishna. I'm simply agent, I'm simply transparent, biomedia. This is all these people are suffering in the material world and they want love of Krishna and they're following Krishna's plan, so they put you up here on the seat. And you don't deserve any more than anybody. You should actually be sitting on the floor with all the other prabhus. But somehow or other, you've got the misfortune that you are now accepting all this worship and praise. So, we have to do this. We have to go through this. This is Krishna's arrangement. There is joy in it because the most joyful thing for a disciple of Srila Prabhupada is to see that more and more people are coming to Prabhupada's lotus feet, and more people are reading his books. The books are the basis of our movement. Preaching is the essence of our movement. Books and preaching, so important. And so when we see that more and more people are coming and learning what we learned about Srila Prabhupada, that gives us some pleasure. So we agree to do the service. It's something like raising a family, in the sense that the parents, the mother undergoes a lot of pain during pregnancy, and then there's childbirth, and then there's, you know, all the other problems with raising a child, all the austerities, and then so many things, expenses, you have to work harder, you have to do something. You sacrifice so much, and then your children grow up, and some of them ignore you, some of them take you casually, some of them reject you totally, and some of them please you. But overall, parents never forget any of their children, even their most naughty children, but a mother especially, and even a good father will never forget his children. I know I was a big failure to my father in terms of what he valued and loved. But I saw him some months or so before he died. And I could see that, you know, he actually in his own way loved me. So it's a difficult service to do, but it's also a very nice service to, as we've seen in Srila Prabhupada's own character, in the words of his own spiritual master, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta. Their mood was that my Guru Maharaj has sent me all these nice boys and girls. They've been sent by my Guru Maharaj to help me. So we consider that all of you have been sent by Srila Prabhupada to help his disciples push on his mission, and so we feel very much indebted to you, and we're very much dedicated to serving you in whatever way we can. As far as today's function is concerned, I would
like to thank all of you, and especially those who took more responsibility. Very short notice. They organized nicely. And I think it's an improvement on last year because it's better organized. So thank you very much. And I guess, I guess we'll go on.
Geared to
a career of some kind by which we will be able to earn money. The original university, believe it or not, the first known university was in India. Sometime in the 5th century BC. They had about 10,000 students and various subjects. But from that time, there has been a gradual change in the direction of the course of education. Initially, education was meant to help someone develop an understanding of the purpose of human life, the difference between matter and spirit, and how to develop good qualities. In fact, even up to the last century, there was an expression, even in the big universities like Oxford and Cambridge, that someone was well turned out. It meant that he didn't just have knowledge of some type of occupation, but he had a good character. In other words, a person educated in a university was expected to be a gentleman. And we find from early times that the development of a good character meant development of one's knowledge of the purpose of this human form of life. Unless we know what our actual goal is, where we are going, what our purpose is, it's very hard to, or there's a big difference, depending on what we decide, there's a big difference in how our life will be directed. For example, if our consciousness, if our understanding is that the body is the self, then our education and our activities will be directed towards anything that will further the pursuit of gratification of our senses. It only makes good common sense. If I'm the body,
if I am this machine, if I am the tongue, I am the eyes, the ears, the nose, the tactile sense of this is who I am, then obviously my life will be dedicated to acquiring facility for these instruments. Also, if I have no other goal in my life than sense gratification, if I don't see anything beyond the death of the body, then we find even great philosophers conclude, beg, borrow, or steal, but somehow get ghee means material opulence, and enjoy life. There was a famous philosopher in India, his name was Charvak Muni, and the ultimate conclusion of his philosophy was beg, borrow, or steal, but somehow get material opulence and enjoy life. So someone who thinks like that, you can't find any fault in his activities. But someone who has got a little more evolved intelligence, he can understand that there's something more than just the machine. Just like a child may see a car, a beautiful car going by, and the child may think, oh, there's a beautiful Porsche going by. Or whatever you like, BMW, I don't know. Everybody has their favorites. But the child will basically only see the machine. But an adult will see that there's a driver in the machine. Who is the person driving that car? The adult, just like the example is given of, say, the prime minister. Do you have a prime minister here or a president? Oh, you have both. Who's on top? Huh? Both?
No.
Huh?
President.
Okay. So when you see the president's car going by, then an adult will say, there goes the president. They see the presidential car and they think, there goes the president. Of course, in this case, he may not be driving his own car. He may have a chauffeur. But the point is that the body is nothing but a car, but within the body there is a driver. One thing that makes us different from animals is that we have this ability to reason, to consider, to think deeply. Animals can think. Any of you who have household pets, like a cat, the cat will see that the family members have left the house, and they've left me in the house, and they've left the refrigerator door open. So the cat has enough intelligence to figure all those things out and go for the milk or the cheese or whatever it is he's after. Animals in various species have amazing kinds of intelligence, even more refined than human beings in some cases. But animals are not interested in philosophy. Animals can do nothing about their situation. Two goats are eating grass, and the farmer comes. I don't know if people eat goats here, but in India everybody eats goats. But the farmer comes to take one goat for slaughter. And as long as there's sufficient grass left, the other goat will think, oh, nice grass. Is there any more? He's not worried that his friend just disappeared. The farmer's got a big axe in his hand, and, you know, he can't put two and two together and get four. And dogs are forced to live outside, and they don't get to live, generally speaking, in the nice big warm house. But you never see dogs getting together to form a union and protest and insist that they get better treatment. They have to accept whatever nature gives them. But human beings are more intelligent, and therefore they try to improve their material condition. But if we don't go beyond eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, if we don't go beyond using our intelligence just for animal activities, then we're wasting the human form of life. We're missing lost opportunities. So, real education is that education which helps us to discriminate between the spirit self and the bodily self. The major problem that we have with today's civilization is they've overemphasized to a high degree the importance of a physical life. They have neglected to investigate, to try to understand who I really am. Now I know the future of the body. Moksha Rupini may not be happy, but we don't need astrologers. I think he has an astrology business or something. We don't need an astrologer to tell us the future of the body. It's very obvious. I can give you all private consultation and charge you a high fee for astrology services. And give you a fancy piece of paper with all kinds of designs on it and everything. And perhaps I'll have a crystal ball in my room, and maybe I'll wear a turban. But ultimately our future is old age, disease, and death, and a garland. See, I knew the future. So this is our future of the body: old age, disease, and death. Now, one secret that a lot of people don't know is that it doesn't stop there. There's also rebirth in another physical body. One experience, I would suspect that none of you have ever lived in India. Maybe some of you have visited, maybe some of you have seen a documentary movie, but I would conjecture that none of you have ever lived there. It's another world. The difference between London and Bombay is just a difference between night and day. Very often people, especially, I mean, if you go and you go from London from a five-star hotel to Bombay to a five-star hotel and go in an air-conditioned bus and look out the window and, you know, you point at all the things, you'll never really see India, but... For those who actually go and live with the people, live in the towns, live in the villages, it's actually quite a culture shock or a culture change. And one of the things I noticed in India is that due to their cultural heritage and due to their ancient philosophy, people have a certain attitude towards death. You can tell that they're not so attached when you catch a taxi. Taxis drive very, very fast on very crowded roads in an ambassador car. Which is a 1954 model, it's a mold of a 1954 English car called the Ambassador. They say about the Ambassador that everything in the car makes a noise except for the horn. In not very good roads with people and cows and carts walking all over the road, and you know, people, the car will be going at maybe 100 kilometers an hour. There'll be a crowd of people on the road, just maybe 50 meters ahead of you. And you cover your eyes and pray to Mary and Jesus. And then at the very last moment, the people just kind of casually step out of the way, and the taxi driver just keeps going as if nothing had happened. They're not very afraid of death. They have this understanding that the soul survives the death of the body. They've been taught that through their cultural upbringing and their ancestors and generations before them understood this. So one thing I noticed was that they're kind of casual about differences that there are between people who are experiencing good karma and bad karma. You know, you'll see all kinds of people walking the street. Of course, very wealthy people will be in cars, but you'll see very, very poor people, crippled people, crazy people. They don't have a system of, at least, you know, there's not a system of segregation per se. Again, that comes from this understanding that according to our activities, the soul at the time of death gets another material body, and we have no guarantee what kind of body that is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Just as an example, according to the Vedas, according to the Bhagavad Gita, according to the laws of scripture, someone who kills, especially a cow, which is a very important animal, for every hair on the back of the cow, that person has to take birth and be killed himself, and again take birth and again be killed, and for every hair on the back of the cow. So, for example, just practically in an agrarian civilization, the cow and the bull are very, very important animals. Grain, the fields are plowed and grains are sown by with the help of the bull. So if people are killing the bulls, then they're attacking the very source of subsistence of the whole society. And the cow, of course, is providing the most nutritious of all foods, namely milk. In fact, in our childhood, we subsist on our mother's milk up to a certain age, and then cow's milk. So the cow is also one of our mothers. Cows eat what we can, grass, and convert it into the most wonderful food. I mean, none of you could eat grass and enjoy your life, I don't think. What do we use grass for? Nothing. I just read a funny story by a famous, I'm reading one of his books, and he's one of the more famous American authors of the last century. So he wrote this a bunch of short stories. One of them was about someone who's trying to find out how they manufactured their milk. He couldn't figure it out. And the author is Mark Twain. I don't know if any of you have heard of Mark Twain, but his humor is a very special kind of humor. Even on himself, he said that others' books are just like the finest liquor, sweet-tasting liquor, whereas my books are just like water. And he said, more people drink water. But anyway, this story that he told, this man couldn't figure out how the cow was getting his milk, and it was written in a humorous style, eventually the man took a cow and milked the cow and then tied the cow up in a field and didn't let the cow go anywhere. So he, you know, thought the cow, he left the cow overnight and had a guard there, and the cow wasn't getting any outside help, no one was filling him up with milk or anything. So then he came in the morning and again milked the cow, and sure enough there was milk there. He was shocked. So then he went to tell his friend that cows, they suck in the milk through the atmosphere into their bodies, and that's where milk comes from. But it's obvious, obvious, the cow is eating grass. And therefore, for us, the point is, for us to kill cows is a very inauspicious activity. We have a farm in Hungary near Balaton Lake. I think probably most. Have you heard of Balaton Lake? How many people have heard of Balaton Lake? It's quite big. Okay, it's quite famous. So we have beautiful cows there. We have about 15 cows that were born as devotees, the devotee cows, that Tilak and other cows. They dance in kirtan. So while I was there, there were lots of tour buses coming to see our farm. We have about 650 acres of land. And they have a beautiful temple, and they have an art department, a bakery. They have many nice facilities there, and the tourists are taken on a tour. So, invariably, they would end up in the barn to see the cows. And a number of times I was there when guests would come, and many of them were from Budapest or from other big cities throughout Europe. So I was really surprised how frightened, especially the women and children, but in general everybody was, of the cows. So being the, you know, type of person I am, I would go over and grab them by the hand and pull them up to the cow, because the cows are so nice. And come on, that cow is nice. Or she's nice. And the cow would go, and lick them on the face, and, you know. And then they would really get into it. Wow, these animals are so nice. I would take them to two or three cows, and, you know, the children would get all ecstatic, mommy, daddy, I'm getting the cows.
Mm-hmm.
So then they were a little preaching and you know, then they were leaving. And I couldn't resist. I would always say, now don't go to McDonald's again. Because most people don't realize how beautiful the cows are. So that's a kind of external reason for such a heavy reaction in the law of karma, because you're taking the life of animals which affect our society very much, and they're so innocent. But there are deeper reasons also, spiritual reasons. The cows are animals which are basically the next birth before human birth. The last birth in the cycle of evolution is getting birth as a cow, or as a lion, or as a monkey. So be sure to be nice to those lions and monkeys next time you see them. But especially the cows are in the mode of goodness. The cows are very dear to Krishna. Often Krishna's name is Govinda, one who gives pleasure to the cows and to the senses. So, birth, old age, disease, and death, and rebirth. People have no knowledge that this is the actual destination of the individual. But this is the main purpose for our being humans. If you're really enthusiastic for eating and sleeping and mating and defending, if that's really what you like to do, you like to go out to restaurants, the best in town, you like to eat all kinds of fancy foods, you like to eat whatever your tongue demands. You want to have a nice house with a beautiful bed. You know, I've seen in America some incredible examples of what people can do to a bedroom. You know, you pour hundreds of thousands of dollars into a bedroom. I mean, all you got to do, you know, you're supposed to sleep, you know, but they make huge arrangements for a fabulous bed. And sex, you know, that's you're talking about my generation. You know, I mean, that's what we're into. Everyone, sex makes the world go round. Everywhere you control. Your eyes are bombarded with images of sex. Your ears are blasted with sounds of sex. Your tongue is attracted by various kinds of images promoting sex. All of your senses. So, you know, I come from that way of life. I mean, I'm from America. We have facility for doing those things. And I would say that if that's what we want from our lives, if that's what we think our human form of life is for, then we're making a mistake. If you really want to get serious, then you should be a pig. I'm deadly serious. Think about it. You can have sex with your mother, your sister, your daughter, or any other pig that runs by. Day or night. That's a pig's life. You can be a pigeon. There's no bird or animal that has the consistency in sex like a pigeon. Everything you can think about, every kind of sense gratification that you can think about, there's another species of life that has better facilities.
So
why is that? What is there some plan to this? Is there something meant by all of this? Well, that's what education is about, to learn the answers to these questions. According to Vedic education, if you get the human form of life and act like a pig, then your next birth will be as a pig. If you get the human form of life and then act like a tiger, you know, just eating animals, then you'll get a tiger's body because you don't have to cook it, you don't have to spice it, no salt needed, no bun, no lettuce, no tomato. You know, you just rip it apart and slurp down the blood and joy. I'm being very serious. I may try to lighten it up with a little joke or something, but I'm actually deadly serious. Why don't we think about some of these things? Because there's nothing in our education that even begins to discuss the subject. Now, one thing I know,
And one thing that I know, you know. Is that we all want to be happy. Anybody here want to be unhappy? I'll give you my blessing.
But how can I be happy if I do not know who I am? So maybe my education should begin with trying to understand some basic numbers.
Now let me tell you about some of the educated people from, let's say, India. Who were interested in spiritual knowledge.
It is not that they were, you know, they couldn't make it in life, and therefore they took up spiritual life, because they were just a failure, they couldn't pass college, they couldn't get a job, so they became a Hare Krishna.
There are so many great examples, and I know because I've lived there, I've studied the culture. Of people who had perfect brains. Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharya, Nimbarkacharya, these are great spiritual leaders, yogis. They had such a perfect brain they could remember anything that they had read 50 years ago and repeated verbatim, word for word. They could remember whole sections of the Vedas and recite them whenever they needed. They were the king of all science, is the science of philosophy, and they had a powerful understanding of philosophy. They had full control of their mind and senses. Many of them had mystical powers. In other words, the power of their mind, they could control matter. So, it's not that this is something which is secondary in our lives. Animal activities are secondary. Eating, sleeping, mating, and defending is secondary. Dhanasmanustita pumsam visvakshena kathasuya nodpadaya yadari yadirathim shramaya vahi kevalam. Srimad Bhagavatam says that if we achieve material perfection but don't understand our spiritual life, we've totally wasted our time. So basically, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness is
a confederation of communities, temples, farms, and different projects, schools, meant to give people an alternative to one-sided materialistic education. Now, the essence of the philosophy is the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. This is a very sublime process of meditation or yoga. It's easy, it's scientific, one can see very quickly his progress. Janayadyashu vairagyam jnanam cha yada hoitukam. One will develop transcendental understanding or knowledge, and one will become unattached to the physical, material world. Automatically. But there's another advantage also, that just like those beautiful cows, this way of life is meant for developing the mode of goodness, the mode of happiness. The result of practicing a Krishna conscious way of life is that one will become materially and spiritually satisfied. So, as I said, I have been in Slovenia this time for a number of months, and also Croatia. I honestly feel that there are many intelligent and simple-hearted people here. I think that people can take advantage of this knowledge, Vedic knowledge, ancient spiritual knowledge. And transform our already existing civilization with a more spiritual direction. As I said, I'm going back to India now because I get a lot of inspiration there, especially in the holy places. But I look forward to, with the permission of the devotees here, I look forward to coming back and, along with all the other devotees, encouraging all of you. This is the right path. It is needed at this time in history. And hopefully we can all work together in this project.
Okay.
the Swami. We could have a nice kirtan now. But maybe we're going to have one meeting, are we? The most, very often you're accustomed to bhajans where you sit down. standing and chanting is, you can really just kind of let go, you know. Most people have to get totally drunk before they can just, you know, let go when in their dances and whatever, but devotees, we just let go anyway. We don't need to get drunk. We're very happy. We know there's real pleasure, real nectar in dancing and chanting for Krishna's pleasure. So today is also my 51st birthday. So there's nothing more I would like better than to see all of you singing and dancing and chanting. So can we have a kirtan?
Yeah.
Okay. Are you going to stand up and chant and dance?
Okay.
Hare Krishna. Hare Rama.